splits are a vital part of understanding the world, the way that the world is divided, and it is divided from the very beginning. The Torah begins, as the 3rd century text, the Bahir, points out, and the rabbis in the 8th century in the Talmud point out, why does the Torah, our holiest document, begin with the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet instead of the first? It would have been intuitive to think that start with the first letter, start with A, why B? It's a very rabbinic question. You can answer it prosaically and simply, but, you know, Occam's razor, what do you mean? Why not start it with the fourth letter, right? Like, why not start it with no letter at all? But for the rabbis, there was something being spoken in that question. The assumption that the Hebrew alphabet, of course, is meaningful, and the letters themselves signify something narratively or psychologically or ontologically. And the letter Bet represents not one, but two. And so it is. As the Tao Te Ching, also a great mystical wisdom text says, there's yin and yang, there's two in the beginning. The one can't be spoken, but the two is real. And so the Torah begins with a Bet, as if to say, it's about two friends. Oh, the oneness that you seek, great. It's not written there. It's antecedent to, it's prior to, embedded within, whatever you want to say. But division is a part of life. And even we would say it's sanctified in the Torah. The first chapter of the book of Genesis, which is a mythic story of how the world begins with divisions and container store. Everything is put into its place, labeled nicely, as if to sanctify not only order, but not one. The holiness of multiplicity, plurality, and all the danger inherent therein, yeah? And forever from that moment of the Bet, or the yin and yang, or the moment where a child says no for the first time and says, not you, but me, we've been seeking the Aleph that precedes the Bet, the one that is implicit in the two. We run from the two and try to embrace the one. We look for it, you know? I'm trying to tell you something about my life. We look for it in a lot of different places because we intuit it. We intuit the one, the Aleph. So then how ironic and amazing is it that when the rabbis came to try to intercalate or figure out the calendar of the Hebrew calendar, and we have 12 months in the year, and they decided of all the months of the year to introduce a second month into that year in the event, and of course the inevitability, the eventuality that the lunar calendar didn't line up with the solar calendar. And every couple of years, we have to have a second month in order to bring them into alignment, because the lunar and the solar calendar in the Jewish temporal, the way that we think about time, they have to be aligned. So we add a month. But where are we going to add it? The rabbis wonder. Let's add it in a lot of different places. No, let's add it in the last month of the year, the month of Adar, which is beginning tonight and tomorrow. And this happens to be a year in which we'll have two Adars, Adar 1, Adar 2. It's called not a leap year. It's called a pregnant year. Shana Me'uberet. But here's where I said it's interesting. You're thinking, well, that's not so interesting. Let me tell you why it's interesting. It's not interesting yet. Because from already in the rabbis in the Talmud, and then explicitly in the 13th century, and then for at least the last 2,000 years, every mystic from Morocco to Baghdad to Poland, where my ancestors lived, to Germany, to France, to America, every Jewish mystic read the word, the name of the month, Adar, not as Adar, A-D-A-R, but Aleph Dar, the month in which unity Dar rests. So now it's weird. The quote-unquote month in which unity rests, the Aleph Dar, read playfully, Pisces, if you believe in that system, splits into two. The one month that points towards Aleph, towards that letter that precedes the Bet of the Torah, that month becomes the month that has a doppelganger. As if the calendar were screaming to us, the world is all about oneness, but you can't get there except by two. And our work in the world is to ever try to unify that which is so difficult to bring together. I think this year more than ever, that rings true for me about these months, because these months were told by the rabbis, this month Adar is a month in which normally we would be celebrating the most raucous and crazy holiday called Purim. And so they pushed it away until the second month, as if to say to us, the joy of Adar, of seeking oneness, is split this year. It's rent asunder. It is torn in its midst. From that day on October 7th, when Simchat Torah, when the joy of Torah was defiled, until the ongoing tragedy and unfolding, untold suffering that is going on in the Middle East and now in so many other places, it's so difficult to enter this month without pushing it to the next month. It's so difficult to imagine putting on a mask and running around and saying, look at me, I'm going to dress up this year as, I don't know, a former president or something. I don't know. It's so hard to think about the Aleph, because Bet is really, really intense now. We began tonight with Fast Car and that iconic moment on stage where there seemed to be something of the Aleph. We were all like, crying. I was crying. I know we were all, a lot of people told me they were crying too. Not everybody. I was certainly bawling. And throughout the week, kept coming back to that, thinking, is this possible in the world? Is this image and all this represents, all that Tracy Chapman represents in this country and all that maybe Lacombe, that it's not fair maybe to caricature them, but something in me was hoping that, wow, Adar's coming. Maybe there's a hope for us to find what's universal in us, what unites us, not divides us. We are the united Aleph states, Bet of America, right? E pluribus unum, right? From the Bet, the Aleph, from the many, the one. But this isn't, I know how a lot of us feel at this moment. Many, many years ago in the shul, I remember talking about the Aleph and the mystical shape of it, you know, that when you write an Aleph in the Torah, you make it this way, with two yuds. One yud is pointing towards heaven. The second yud is pointing to the ground. And there's a vav, a diagonal straight line that's in the middle, and they come together to make an Aleph. Isn't that beautiful? Like, so every scribe, every sofer has to write it that way. And I think some of you remember that I was talking about how once when I was praying, my son came, and he came over and he was tugging on me while I was praying, and he wouldn't let me go until I finally gave him my pinky, and he grabbed it. And then I felt like I wanted to put my pinky up like this. So let God let me be the vav, you know, between a child's hopes and what is true in the world, you know. I want to be a bridge. I want to be a place in this community, and I think a lot of us want to be this way, where those dichotomies and those bifurcations and especially those binaries might be transcended in some way, that inherent in the Aleph itself is an awareness of the Bet that's coming. And the Aleph says, let me try to unify these two places. The last thing I'll share with you, and I know it's already a lot, and hopefully it made some sense, I was sharing with my colleagues at the Y this week that last week's Torah portion, which dealt with the ecstasy of Sinai, and this week's Torah portion, which deals with the details, the laundry list of how to live in the world, is also connected by a vav. The parsha begins with ve'ele hamishpatim, the little vav, and the rabbis don't know why the vav is there. It's not necessary. And on this part, I'm sorry, you're going to have to look it up. The rabbis don't know why there's a vav at the beginning of the parsha. It's a conjunctive. It feels as if it's saying, and also, it should just say, these are the laws, not, and these are the laws. And so the rabbis say the vav is there to connect these two parsha together, as if they're not normally, they wouldn't be held together. That Sinai and the earth are not aligned, that we have to hold them together. We have an ideal image of our family. We have an ideal image of our synagogue. We have an ideal image of our friends. We have an ideal image of our wives, of our husbands. We have an ideal image, and we ourselves experience that betness, that split between the ideal and the real, between what could be and should be and what really is. And it tears us apart. There's the Sinai of the perfection, and then there's the day-to-day realities on the field. And our work in the world is to be that vav in the middle of the Aleph. And if you're not following any of the letters at this point, doesn't matter. You're like the vav, the bet, the Aleph, which one is it? It's just bring it together. And so I want to just pray that that becomes a clear mission for as many of us as possible, a clear mission to notice when things become split and to be the one and the ones who help in some way, shape, or form, small, medium, large, to try to bring together what has been rent asunder in our own ways, and that every little bit counts. And I believe that, because when we lose that, then I think that we can fall into a really dark place. So may the one who helped bring together all of the different things, all the bits, and all of the yud, and all of the harmonies in a world that isn't black and white, but is all of that, help us to see what is common and what is also different, that we might become those who bridge heaven and earth.